This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Investigators are trying to learn what caused a Saudi Air Force pilot to go on a deadly shooting rampage at a U.S. Navy base in Florida. It happened Friday at the Pensacola Naval Air Station and left four people dead, including the attacker. Eight others were wounded. The AP quotes a U.S. official who says the night before the attack, the assailant hosted a dinner party and showed videos of mass shootings. Described as someone who's been briefed by the FBI, the source is also quoted as saying while the attack was happening, a second Saudi student at the base was recording the event from outside the building. Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump says he got a message from Saudi King Salman, who told him that the Saudi people are greatly angered by what he called the barbaric actions of the Florida shooter. After months of rising tensions and sharp rhetoric, Iran and the United States have come to a meeting of minds on something. It was apparent today in Switzerland. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma explains.
Iran and the U.S. have conducted a prisoner exchange that's seen a detained Princeton scholar released for an Iranian scientist held by America. In a trade conducted in Zurich, Switzerland, Iranian officials handed over Chinese-American graduate student Xiyu Wang, detained in Tehran since 2016, for scientist Masoud Soleimani, who had faced federal trial in Georgia. While the exchange represents a rare win for both countries, it comes as Iran still faces crushing American sanctions and the aftermath of national protests. President Donald Trump has acknowledged Wang was freed in a statement from the White House, saying the Princeton scholar would be returning to the United States. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The United States has formally restarted peace negotiations with the Taliban, 3 months after President Trump abruptly stopped the year-long dialogue aimed at finding a political settlement to the war in Afghanistan. Today's meeting was in Doha, Qatar. More news at voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. The general election in the UK is set for next week. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party is favored in the polls. In any event, voter interest is surging. That from election reform expert Tess Garland, who says large numbers of new voters will get to have their say.
In the campaign period overall, 3.8 million people have registered to vote. That compares to about a million more than the same campaign period in 2017. So we've seen a huge surge, and a large part of that is people who are under 34.
Several bushfires in Australia have widened to form one enormous blaze that is burning out of control north of Sydney. Phil Mercer is there and reports for VOA.
Sydney is again shrouded in a toxic, smoky haze. Health warnings have been issued, and many weekend sporting activities have been cancelled. Several blazes have combined to create a mega fire north of Australia's biggest city. The fire's front is 60 kilometres long, and officials warn it's simply too big to put out. Lauren McGowan works in a bar in the nearby city of Cessnock.
Everyone's a bit on edge. It's getting a little bit too close to home for around here, even people that we have working here. The fire's practically on their doors.
There are 95 bushfires here in the drought-hit state of New South Wales. Half are burning out of control.
Phil Mercer filed that report for VOA in Sydney. At the climate change conference in Madrid, much of the spotlight is trained on 16-year-old Greta Thunberg. She's become a kind of rock star in the fight to see more done to reverse the upward spiral of global warming. Reuters correspondent Emma McCarthy has a report.
The 16-year-old, who sparked a global youth-led protest movement, told a panel in Madrid on Friday she hoped the two-week annual round of climate negotiations would help world leaders grasp the urgency of the climate crisis.
That the world leaders, the people in power, grasp the urgency of the climate crisis, because right now it doesn't seem like they are.
By the end of the summit next week, negotiators hope to resolve remaining disagreements on how to implement an accord struck in Paris in 2015 to limit a rise in global temperatures to between 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels.
That was Emma McCarthy of Reuters. The White House says it is not willing to take a role in the impeachment process on Capitol Hill. In fact, it wants the whole thing ended. The Democratic-led House of Representatives continues its hearings next week and appears poised to return articles of impeachment against President Trump by Christmas. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga.
Kenya has suffered several tragedies related to buildings collapsing in recent years, and critics blame the authorities for failing to enforce their regulations and conduct inspections.
At least five people have been confirmed dead in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, after a building collapsed on Friday.
Our brothers and sisters in South Sudan voted overwhelmingly for independence, 98% of them. So South Sudan independence should not and cannot be compromised. But we can live together as two sisterly nations.
Sudan's Prime Minister in Washington had spelled out his government's goals during the transition period.
To stop discrimination, stigmatization of HIV, people will come out to be tested, knowing fully well that, oh, if I'm positive, I'm just okay. I'm going to take the drug, and I will not be discriminated against. I will not be stigmatized by the society.
And the UN Agency for Fighting HIV/AIDS urges Africans to embrace the culture of testing as the first weapon to stop the spread of the deadly virus. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Rescue operations continued in Nairobi's Tasia Estate after the collapse of a six-story residential building Friday. At least five people have now been confirmed dead in Kenya's capital, and rescuers struggle to reach those feared trapped under a mountain of rubble. Building collapses are common in Nairobi, where housing is in high demand and unscrupulous developers often bypass regulations. Earlier, I reached Ruben Chama in Nairobi for an update on the situation. Robin, what's the situation right now?
At this moment, five people have already been confirmed dead from the collapsed building, and 32 others were injured. Already several people are receiving treatment in various hospitals in the city. And by this afternoon, more than 20 people were still unaccounted for, according to the rescue operation.
That means that there are fears that some people may be still trapped in the building?
Preliminary reports indicated that the search operation was still ongoing, and by this afternoon, a combined team of personnel from the Kenya Red Cross, Kenya Police, and the Defense Forces were still at the scene, trying to find more survivors under the rubble. But still, the rescue operations are ongoing, and the government has said that they've commenced investigation into the cause of the accident. But we do not know exactly if there will be more bodies or more survivors from this accident at this point in time.
Talking of the cause of the accident, there have been a lot of finger pointing. Do we know exactly what caused this building to collapse?
Preliminary reports have revealed that the structure was built on a swampy area, but of course the government itself has said they have commenced investigation into the cause of the accident. They are not very clear on what exactly happened. Of course, there is also, you'll remember that there has been also heavy downpour pounding parts of this country over the last few weeks, which might also have contributed to the collapse of the building. So there are several theories as to what might have happened. But of course, you'll also recall that Kenya has suffered several tragedies related to buildings collapsing in recent years, and critics blame the authorities for failing to enforce regulations and conduct inspections. You remember that in September, at least seven school children died and dozens were injured after a classroom collapsed in the Kenyan capital. That is after a wooden structure collapsed just minutes after the start of their school day.
Indeed, as you mentioned, building collapses are common in Nairobi. where housing is in high demand and some developers often bypass regulations. The president in 2015 had promised an audit. How far has the government gone in addressing this issue?
Indeed, there have been several attempts to address the problem. In 2018, the government started a campaign to demolish unsafe buildings in the city, especially those that were deemed to be dangerous for tenants to occupy. There was a multi-agency operation, which was spearheaded by the National Buildings Inspectorate and the National Construction Authority, and operations were carried out in several estates in the city where substandard buildings, some of which had started developing cracks, were actually brought down.
Robin Chama in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Sudan's Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok is in Washington, D.C. this week with a high-level delegation. His team has spent the last few days speaking to U.S. policymakers on the Hill and at the State Department about recent developments in Sudan, following the historic change in leadership in that country earlier this year. The delegation is also hoping to increase diplomatic partnerships with the U.S. at an Atlantic Council event on Thursday. The Prime Minister addressed a room full of people, spelling out his government's goals during the transitional period.
Our number one and top priority is to stop the war and build the foundation of sustainable peace. Essentially, to stop the sufferings of our people in the IDP camps and refugee camps. We think the opportune time of stopping this war is now.
Other priorities include getting Sudan off the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list, which would help Sudan participate in the international economy and usher in new business across the country. Sudan's national debt stands at $60 billion, according to the Prime Minister, who says decreasing the debt is a top priority. And on Thursday, he spoke at length about Sudan's relationship with neighboring South Sudan.
It wasn't by chance that my first visit outside Khartoum was to Juba, for two reasons mainly. One, the symbolism of this relationship between Sudan and South Sudan. We are one nation. History obliged us, maybe mistakes and all that, to stay in two states, but we are one nation. Our brothers and sisters in South Sudan voted overwhelmingly for independence, 98% of them. So South Sudan independence should not and cannot be compromised. But we can live together as two sisterly nations.
Hamdok points out that Sudan shares its longest border with South Sudan, and the lines between the two countries should work for peace and prosperity. He says border disputes between Sudan and South Sudan will be addressed.
To honor the legacy of our late hero, John Garang, who called this Al-Tamazuj Belt. And we can think about this belt from Mdafog. It's a small town in our borders in Central Africa, to Al-Kurmuk in Ethiopia. Transform it to that prosperous border. We don't need to demarcate it. Can leave it as soft borders. And through that process, we'll be able to address challenges of ABA and others.
The Sudan delegation is expected to leave Washington this weekend. Reporter Ian Boer attended the event in D.C. and prepared this report. The UN Agency for Fighting HIV/AIDS is urging Africans to embrace the culture of testing as the first weapon to stop the spread of the deadly virus. The effort by UNAIDS come as the world has set a target of having 90% of people living with HIV/AIDS know their status by next year. Eugene Wimana has more from the Rwandan capital, Kigali.
NAIDS says young adolescents, mainly girls, are prone to new HIV infections because the culture of testing them has not developed or been sensitized enough. Winnie Byanyima is UNAIDS Executive Director.
In Northern Africa, we are seeing an alarming peak in new HIV infections, especially among adolescents who don't know their status. It's also unacceptable that today, 6,200 adolescent girls and young women are infected with HIV every week. We are letting them down.
The big problem, she says, involves children born with HIV.
Half of all children born with HIV who are not diagnosed early will die before their second birthday.
People who live with HIV worry that if Africans don't test or don't get on treatment, if they test positive, antiretroviral drugs won't stop the virus from spreading. Moses Nsubuga is from Uganda. He has lived with HIV since 1994.
So it's really very, very important to test, because testing actually even helps in prevention of the virus. Because, you know, treatment is prevention. When you're on treatment, the risk of infecting others is almost zero. So treatment is very important. You can only start treatment after testing.
Researchers and health experts suggest that the culture of testing in Africa will be developed if governments establish anti-discrimination legislation. Dr. Bolaji Tiamiyu is from Nigeria.
To stop discrimination, stigmatization of HIV, people will come out to be tested, knowing fully well that, oh, if I'm positive, I'm just okay. I'm going to take the drug, and I will not be discriminated against. I will not be stigmatized by the society.
To boost the willingness to be tested, accelerated new technologies have emerged, from going to the hospital for a blood test to waiting a few hours for the results, to self-testing using oral fluids or blood. Dr. Karine Hotslode is the Global Associate Director for the HIV Self-Testing Africa Initiative.
People who want to know about their status don't necessarily have to go to a healthcare facility, but can test on their own in the convenience and the privacy of their home, with whom and whenever they want to test.
UNAIDS estimates that almost two-thirds of all people living with HIV are receiving life-saving antiretroviral therapy, and more than half of these can't transmit the virus. The testing culture is highlighted as one of the major drivers to achieve an AIDS-free world by 2030. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Nigerians have been clamoring against two bills that aim to regulate the online space and freedom of speech. One of the bills could mean a death sentence for anyone found guilty. From Abuja, Nigeria, reporter Gift Agiriga tells us more.
The first bill, the Protection from Internet Falsehood and Manipulations Bill, known as the Social Media Bill, regulates a list of activities on the Internet. The Prohibition of Hate Speech Bill not only bans speech that could be seen as stirring ethnic hatred, imposes the death penalty on violators. There have been several protests against the bills, especially the Hate Speech Bill, which has passed its second reading in Parliament. The bills have been backed by leading members of the ruling All Progressives Party, APC, in Parliament, but several senators opposed the legislation. The minority chief whip, Senator Eninaya Abaribe, says many in the opposition are working to block the bills.
The impression is being given that these laws are tailored to be used against certain groups of people. And so that's why we are totally against it, and we will continue to fight on the floor of the Senate to make sure that it does not pass.
Abaribe said that the real problem in Nigeria is the inability of the government to enforce existing laws and to protect the constitution. Some Nigerians say the fear the bills are part of the government's effort to create an authoritarian state. Emmanuel Owetche is chairperson of the Abuja chapter of the Nigerian Union of Journalists. He said the bills would block freedom of speech.
If those bills perchance were to see the light of the day and gain presidential ascent, then we must all kiss goodbye to democracy in this country. And I do not think Nigerians are ready to be boxed into a corner where they can no longer speak freely.
Nigerians' former military head of government, retired General Ibrahim Babangida, is among those opposing the hate speech bill. He said it would hurt the country's growth and that Nigerians can't be muzzled. Babangida, who ruled from 1985 to 1993, told journalists he would join them in fighting the legislation. Daniel Olatunde, an activist with the Citizens of Impact Foundation, applauded the former head of state.
For the former head of state, General Ibrahim Babangida, to stand against it, that tells you that something is definitely wrong about the bill. One, as a military head of state, people challenge him. Civilians challenge the military. And what we see today, we didn't see during the military era.
Nigerians' proposed laws says that any person who publishes or presents materials deemed to stir up ethnic hatred could be jailed for life. If their actions are found to cause loss of life, the punishment can be death by hanging. Jackson Ojo, a security expert, defends the bill, saying that Nigeria needs such laws at this stage of development for stability and security.
I wouldn't want to make a very loud noise in the opposition to the SP that trying to make from the Senate. They may be right, because if a speech will mean some statement that could polarize, decimate the unity we are enjoying now in the country, I think they could be right.
Nigeria is home to several different ethnic groups and has experienced ethnic or sectarian violence. Fermen communities have frequently been in conflict with herding communities over the past several years, and the Boko Haram Islamist militants have caused thousands of deaths over the past decade. Given the opposition to the two bills, some members of parliament are indicating the hate speech bill's death penalty could be dropped. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Drones are being used as a new weapon in the fight against malaria on the island of Zanzibar. In the village of Cheju, in particular, drones are spraying a silicone-based liquid on large stretches of stagnant water in rice paddies where malaria-carrying mosquitoes lay their eggs. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on how the country is using the new method to combat the disease.
Drones like this are spraying a silicone solution across standing water, forming a thin layer that will eventually prevent mosquito eggs from hatching. Dr. Bart Knowles is a medical entomologist and the lead researcher working with the Zanzibar Malaria Elimination Program. He says this method will significantly reduce the number of the malaria-carrying mosquitoes in the area.
This will last for around 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. Then after that, the biological control agent, the film, will break down by itself. And then you apply, after a month, you apply a new film on the water surface and you have more control of mosquitoes.
Without the gel, the larvae would have become adult mosquitoes in search of a blood meal. When those mosquitoes bite humans infected with malaria, they become vectors for the disease and continue the deadly transmission cycle. Along the Indian Ocean coast of East Africa, Zanzibar and mainly Tanzania have had a long battle with malaria. Using drones is the best way to tackle the problem, says Abdullah Ali from the Zanzibar Malaria Elimination Program.
With the manual kind of intervention, then you'd not be able to cover the wider area. But this one is going to be different.
Officials say drone spraying is a relatively inexpensive way to stop the mosquitoes from reproducing. Guido Welter is with the Drone for Malaria Project.
a drone can fly with the speed we adjust. 1 hectare within 10 liters would be 3 minutes. We calculated that within 1 hour we can spray 8 hectares.
That's equivalent to the size of 8 rugby fields. The product program manager for DJI Agros Drones, Eduardo Rodriguez, say while the drones can operate in manual mode, they can also do the job automatically.
We can also fly into a fully autonomous fly mode, where the pilot, knowing the GPS coordinates and knowing the area that needs to be sprayed, can select that area, can input a few flying and spraying parameters, and literally press 2 buttons.
According to the World Health Organization, Aquitaine AMF, the product being sprayed, is safe and effective when used according to the directions on the labels. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
In Kenya's remote island communities near the border with Somalia, the threat from Al-Shabaab militants has scared away most medical personnel. But one group of volunteers, the Safari Doctors, is braving the danger to provide much-needed regular health care to the area's most vulnerable. Rod Elman reports from Lamu County, Kenya.
We're in the waters in Kenya's Lamu County. We see a sail with the logo of the Safari Doctors on it, flying above the classic wooden ship they use to reach islands near the Somalia border and deliver health care. The people here have always had less access to medicine than in urban areas. But when Al-Shabaab terrorists threatened the region starting in 2011, the few clinics there were abandoned. Lamu-born Umra Omar left her career in the U.S. in 2015 to help the women and children left behind.
And for me, because it was home, because I was a new mother myself, and like seeing other mothers and seeing the need that was there, it just became a natural thing for Safari Doctors to take on from there.
The Safari Doctors visit 12 islands each month, bringing health care to a population of 20,000 people. Mpunga Sufuria came with her baby for a checkup. She says that normally when a child is sick, she would have to go to another island. But getting the medicines from where she is better. While Al-Shabaab militants are a threat, locals say the remoteness of the islands also provides some protection. Aisha Mariadi just received medicines against diarrhea for a sick baby. She says the danger comes when on the roads. There she's scared, but not in the village. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for attacks in Lamu County in 2014 that left nearly 100 people dead and dealt a blow to Kenya's coastal tourism. Founded just a year later, the Safari Doctors say they are aware of the risk, but have yet to face any intimidation, says volunteer Amina Mohammed.
I started in 2017, and ever since I have come for all the clinics, and there has never been any threat whatsoever.
A bigger threat to locals than terrorism is the lack of sanitation and clean water, says Harrison Kalu, who is a nurse.
So this water is not treated, one thing. So during the rainy season, all the dirt is accumulated and put into the jambias, and people collect the same water for drinking.
The Safari Doctors are funded through grants and donations. But the Lamu County government also gives them vaccines and reproductive health care products. The group hopes to merge with the local government by 2022 to formalize its role as the mothership for bringing health care services to Kenya's remote islands. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Lamu County, Kenya.
savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for a Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa.
know you want me. Every day not only when you're lonely. Yeah, you see you think you know me, but you don't even know nothing about me. Yeah, you see my thick thighs, lost when you look into my brown eyes. You see my lips always commit you switch sides. You never know the devil in a disguise. So why don't you stand up, baby? And
Angelina te amo. I think he'll any bagger for you. Baby, please don't go. Where the question is, mi aminga. Girl, I just won't be afraid. Ya bomi na kupenda. Baby, please don't leave me.
down so long.
Muscatella, tell me why would you cheer up? You're one of a kind, I'm one of a kind. It takes two to enjoy up. I see you like movie on hips, so Mr. Fubi, Mobito. She wastes my time, I don't mind. All I need is your name and your number.
I drink it, she drink it, we getting so naughty. Next thing I know, she the feel on my body. As long as she's with it, there's no need to worry.
cool and I'm cool, but I'm feeling some more. Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got a wicked flavor.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got me standing challenge.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got a wicked flavor.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
oh gosh, you all I see. Wake up, let's roll. Let's make this year a party. Disco invasion, naughty. Who? I'm from the 80s, money. I can't deny there's something. Fishing for you is gravy. I think I caught me something. Oh, go, go way up into the heavens. When sky is high, dancing with angels. I feel the vibe. I think I'm high. I'll show you how a man can get it down, brace for a ride.
I drink and she drink and we getting so naughty. Next thing I know she done feel on my body. As long as she's with it, there's no need to worry. She cool and I'm cool, but I'm feeling some more.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got a wicked flavor.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got me spending challenge.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got a wicked flavor.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
oh God, she a lifesaver. Go, go way up into the heavens. When sky is high, dancing with angels. I feel the vibe, I break my mind. I'll show you how a man can get it down, brace for a ride.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got a wicked flavor.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got me spending challenge.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
she's got a wicked flavor.
Sweetie like Muscatella,
oh God, she a lifesaver.
I'm
was our Saturday music spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Salim, producer Saida Hamdun, we thank you for joining us tonight and join us tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga.